welcome to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Dan Roth. Joining me this week is Zach Bowman.
Hey, guys.
And George Kennedy.
Good evening.
I just wanted to remind you, we are brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting, no matter what your vehicle. Check them out at TireRack.com. So, we'll start with the Autoblog Garage, and ZB, what are you driving?
All right, I've got the 2013 Veloster Turbo. Which was a car that I was curious to get my hands on. You know, I haven't heard a lot of great things about it. You know, it's the general temperature of most of the reviews I've read are it's an okay car. It's just nothing all that special.
Well, it's an Elantra.
Yeah. But it's an Elantra with a turbo. You know, turbo 1.6 liter. Four-cylinder with 201 horsepower, which is a good thing.
That's great, but it's still got the Elantra chassis.
Yeah, it's a weird car, man. The steering rack is super quick. Like, it feels kind of darty, but the steering itself is numb and detached, which is weird. And it's got a lot of glass, which makes for... None of which you can see out of, which makes for a really loud cabin. All the tire noise in this car in the world is just crammed into this cabin. It's fairly quick, you know. And I think that
200 horsepower. That's
yeah. No, it's you know, it'll you know, hike up its skirt and gussy on down the road, which is fine. It just doesn't feel like it's enjoying it, you know. And it's got a fair slice of turbo lag. It takes it a while to sort of, you know, build up that yeehaw motion. And I typically have no problem wringing an engine's neck. I come from the Honda line of things where if you aren't just throttling the car, you're not going anywhere and nobody's having any fun. This car, it feels like the blender side of things, where you're only really going when it's on frappe, and when it's on frappe, you feel like you're doing something wrong and not in, like, the premarital sex way, which is fun, but more like the I'm going to break something way.
But it doesn't feel great, but, like, I feel like the people buy that car for the looks, and, like, that is the main reason.
Yeah, I think that's accurate, and it does get a lot of looks, and I gotta say, it's a pretty cool-looking car. It doesn't look like anything else on the road, and not in a bad way. Dan, don't be that guy.
I
applaud it because it's creative, yes. And it's different.
I agree with you 100%. I just don't dig it.
And, you know, asymmetrical things typically make my eyes twitch. And this one, it doesn't really bother me because I don't look at it and think, wow, there's not, you know, a door on the other side and I don't understand what's happening. You don't even see it. And most people don't. You know, I had a couple of guys walk up to it and they're like, whoa, there's a door back here. And it just doesn't look it. They've done a really good job of hiding it. It's fairly spacious with the hatch. You know, you flop down the seats and there's room.
Don't you love that warning sticker that says, you will crush your rear seat passenger's head. Be careful with this hatch.
Yeah, you'll smash some domes. The problem is, the entire time I was driving this car, I was thinking, Focus ST.
Oh, the Focus ST just steps on that car's neck. It just slaps it around, knocks it down, steps on his neck.
God, it breaks my heart. I want to be like, go Hyundai, this is cool and fun, and it's a hatchback, and it's got a turbo four-cylinder, and it's kind of funky looking. But, God, the freaking sticker on this thing. Let's see. It came with a panoramic sunroof, which is part of the Ultimate Package for $2,500. So you're looking at a total price of $27,520. With destination and handling. And a Focus ST starts at 24 and change.
Yeah.
Also,
that's... for 27, I know.
Be stupid, I know.
But just there, what you can buy for 27. And
there are infinitely other cars that you could have. You could have. And I know I give Subaru a hard time, but for the cash, performance-wise, a WRX would punch this car's face in. It's just underbite face would just be crammed out its derriere. I don't know. It's
27 it's, grand. You can get a V and an 8.
Enough. Yeah, yeah, that's certainly true. And entirely different, I think.
Yes.
In terms of like livable cars, this has quite a bit more function than what you're thinking.
Yes.
But still, I don't know. It was just an odd car, and I really wanted to like it, and I wanted to be excited about it. And it's I would say it's probably one of the more fun things in the Hyundai stable, even including Genesis Coupe, which is another one of those cars that, you know, on paper and, you know, by the look of it, seems like it hits all the right notes, and then you drive it, it's sort of not quite there compared to the rest of the class. You know, this is much the same way. I could not see myself laying down the cash for this when the Focus ST is out there waiting to poke you in the eye.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is I was reading an article earlier today online, and it noted that the Porsche 959 was about the size of the Veloster. Doesn't that turn your head around when you look at the Veloster? And what I note about the Veloster is its long wheelbase compared to its actual like physical length. It's got a good amount of stretch there, but to look at that car and go, really? That's the size of a 959?
Where did you read that?
I'm not going to divulge where I read it. You'll just have to read around and find it. But
why not?
It's out there.
Was it like Better Homes and Gardens? Are you embarrassed?
Yes, it was Ladies Home Journal. I was on the John.
I figured.
No, but anyway, that's just really that car. It strikes me as odd because I think of the Veloster as a small car, and I don't think of the
9. Well,
as a small car.
It just goes to show everything has swollen over the years.
Well, I think it also plays into how well that they've done in terms of just creating these optical illusions that give you the whole visual package, and you're not really seeing, you know, the second set of doors on the right side, and it, you know, doing a lot of nifty things with the design that sort of trick you into, you know, seeing something that maybe is or isn't there.
Yeah. When I look at the – Zach's right, swollen. The Veloster looks swollen and sort of inflamed.
Like, you know, I think it has nice proportions, and I think it's got a really cool rear end with the center-up exhaust. I think it's – if you don't – you can't just, like, focus on individual elements because you look at the nose and it's got, like, this underbite thing going on.
That's good. I like the sound effect that goes along with it. That's nice. Nice.
It's the truth, and, you know, the – everything looks a little exaggerated, but you look at it as an entire package, and it definitely looks unlike anything else on the road, and I've got to give them props for that big time.
But it's one of those cars where all the parts are there. All the pieces are there. You know, it's got the turbo engine. It's got the offbeat looks. It's got certainly a lot of value. It's just they don't all come together in a harmonious way. There's still, like, there's discord. It's a minor chord instead of, like, a major chord. It doesn't sound happy.
Well, you know what? Bad guys have to make entrances too, Dan. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay, so this is your bad guy car, I guess. All right, so we've beat up on the Veloster enough. Although, what kind of mileage are you getting? Bad?
You know, I haven't really looked, to be honest. But probably bad, given how...
Okay, so we'll just say that you got 23.
No. What's the sticker on this thing? Sticker 24 City 31. That's probably right. That's probably accurate.
Yeah. Okay.
There's been a lot of hi-ho silver action with this car.
And away! And you wait and wait and wait, and then it gallops!
Exactly.
Excellent. So, George.
Yes.
You are driving what?
The 2013 Nissan Sentra. It was the SR trim.
Senior. Excellent, because that's the only people I see driving them.
Well, I mean, all I can say is thank God they didn't go as far as to call it SER because it is no SER.
Like, they have an SER.
I would have driven to Franklin to punch somebody in the face for you. I'd be like, this is for George Kennedy. Ah!
Put a manual in it. Ah! yeah, I mean, it's an attractive, competent car, and there's no real, you know, superlatives that I would throw out there along with it. I mean, it drives well. It's dealing in a competitive set that really you need to have your A game to really hang with, and it has like its B plus game. You know, Nissan usually does a really good job with the CVTs, but I like them much better when paired with the V6 well, for obvious reasons.
Naturally.
But with the smaller engine, the I think the 1.8 liter, it's just sort of, it's another one of those cars where you go to lay on it and there's that lag, that sort of rubber band effect of the CVT, and you're just sort of left waiting to get up to speed. I found myself actually a lot because, you know, with the automatics, you have the tap shift function, or you can even sort of hit the low gear to sort of trick it into doing the tap shift thing. This I found hitting the overdrive off button to like actually get some sort of acceleration out of it.
Yeah, that's the truth with all Nissans. It's like the fun button. It's like the go faster button, because it just, you know, completely deletes overdrive and you just wrap it out.
OD off on the side of the shifter should just be a little red button that says do not push.
Is it truly like a go faster button or just make more noise button?
It could be a placebo effect. It could be just a make more noise button. But it, you know, it's just a general, you know, it does what it does, and it's good at doing that. You know, it's competent daily transportation.
Right. I was gonna say, what does it do? Like, does it have a big trunk compared to? Look at its competitive class that it's up against. Okay, what is it? What's it competing against?
Focus. Like the Civic, Focus, Civic. You know, Corolla, Cruise. I mean, the back seat is pretty decent. Okay, one thing I didn't like is that you really can't slide the seat back too far if you're in the front row. And I'm 6'3", and I went to slide it all the way back, and I go, wait, this is it? This is all I get?
Clearly, you're too tall for the Sentra.
Apparently so. But I was in the Versa, and I could slide it all the way back and have plenty of room.
But as we all know, the Versa has a back seat that is roomier than an E-Class Mercedes.
Chevy Malibu. It's huge. It's freakishly huge. I've said this before. Yeah, I stand by the Versa. Just saying.
What's strange, so it's actually an interesting comparison, because with the Versa, they've really made the most of the room that they have. I feel like with the Sentra, they were just downsizing an Altima, you know, visually and in execution. And in doing so, they're making a car that maybe doesn't take advantage of the space that's given to the best of its abilities.
Well, they don't put as much into the Versa as they put in the Sentra. And I don't say that facetiously. I mean, the Versa has thinner seats. It's clearly scooped out in the interior to have that much room for the class. You know, that's one of its crowning achievements in that class, is the space that you get. Whereas the Sentra tries a little harder to be a more mainstream regular car that's going to compete with everything else in that class. What it carries over is that Altima styling, and I think the penalty you pay for that on the outside is, you know, it's physically decent sized for its class. It's whatever. And inside, you miss out on some of the space because of that styling.
Yeah, it feels narrow, like long and narrow, sort of the way that, you know, I had the Prius last week, and it felt the same way, of a long, narrow car that feels a little tedious on ramps and off ramps. But I mean, other than that,
notice how we just let you die.
We're like, yes, and
okay.
It also has wheels, I've heard.
Thank you. The fuel cost, it was, you know, I was driving with a rather heavy foot and averaged 32.5 miles per gallon, which was good.
Wow, that's impressive. Yeah. And this what engine does this have?
The 1.8 liter, which I think makes 130 horsepower.
That's pretty good.
Back in the day, you'd get 130 horsepower out of like 2.5 liters with a turbo. So that's not bad.
I would have stabbed someone in front of their own mother for 130 horsepower in college. I kid you not. Twice, if someone asked.
Well, like I said, I'm glad that they don't use the same SER designation that is, you know, this is the top level trim for them, but all it is a visual package. It's got like different side skirts and the lower front valence and the fog lights and all that pretty little stuff that really doesn't add up to like a performance oriented car. So I'm glad they, you know, were.
What was the sticker on this one?
It was, I didn't get a Moroni with it, but as spec'd out, I just went and built it out online, and it was 22,590, and that is like top trim, everything you can get, tops out at about.
So that means it's got that Nissan nav system that's built into the radio and all the other.
Nav system's great too. Like,
I'm not knocking it. I'm just like,
yes, that's what it has, everything. Yeah. That's what the appearance package, the navigation. That's everything. That's the kitchen sink. And it's, I mean, because it starts at 15.9.
That's not honestly for a well-equipped car. That's not a bad price. Yeah.
When I say 59, I mean for, you know, that's the base MSRP for the Sentra altogether. I think when you build out the SR, you're looking at like 21 in that range, and then as you add out options, you get up to 22,590.
That's still, I mean, that's for a well-equipped car. That's what we're learning now is that you want the stuff, you don't necessarily want the size.
There are options.
Yeah, I mean, you wind up in the $20,000 range with all of the things, as my friend Zach is so fond of saying. That's not a bad price.
I mean, for low 20s, it's very well contented, which is what buyers want right now.
Yes. What I would like is if they're going to make an SER, take the Juke engine and...
For the love of Christ, Nissan, it's all you have to do to make me happy.
You know what? Just take the whole Juke, like everything. Engine, all-wheel drive, everything, and just...
Do what you did with the Juke R regarding the GTR, and just do that to the normal Juke to the Sentra.
Well, that's not going to work. I mean, that completely...
Really, they could just cut like 3 inches of suspension out of the Juke, and I would be happy. Just make it a little weird-looking hatchback that's fast as balls.
You know what? I bet you could do that to your own personal Juke. It's just too new for you to buy.
Correct, and gets horrible, horrible fuel economy.
But who cares, because it's fun.
It is really fun. I got 16 out of the Juke.
That's about what I got, too.
It was so bad.
Yeah, that little turbo, man, it's working.
Whew, man, so much fun, though.
This week, I have the heavily lauded 2013 Honda Accord. You know, this car has been awarded a lot throughout its history. And the flip side of that is that there's lots of people who will say stuff like, the Accord is okay, but it's nothing special, and blah, blah, blah. Basically dismissing it as just, you know, a good, boring car. These are people that, like, if you're at a party and they're trying to talk to you about cars, you should make a note to yourself to now it's time to go get some more, I don't know.
Schnapps.
Yes. Always an answer. just don't talk cars with them anymore, because frankly, they don't have a feel for nuance and you should not trust their opinions. The 2013 Accord is a phenomenal car to drive. Oh, come on.
It's really good. Phenomenal. That's a bridge too far. There are
for you.
Chinks in yonder armor, Dan Roth.
I have a word for you, Zach, and that word is context.
I gotta go get some schnapps. I'll be right back.
Taken among its peers, you know, the Accord is phenomenal. Of course,
I'm having a really hard time swallowing that word, Dan.
Come on, it's not going to deliver the same experience as like a Mustang, but you don't expect a Mustang to seat five and stock up at Costco either. That's what the Accord can do. It's you know, and the other thing this year is that there's struts up front now, which people thought was maybe the end of the line for Honda chassis stuff. No,
it's not true. It drives really well. I entirely agree with you there.
It's the Honda, and that is praise.
Right. It's fast as stink. It's even in the four cylinder with the CVT, it is a disturbingly fast car. The V6, it'll peel your eyeballs off.
This is the V6 Touring, let me tell you.
Sweet criminy.
Crazy rocket fast.
And it's like not- you say, for this segment, and like the Camry V6 is also quick, but it doesn't feel as quick as the Accord. The
V6 feels freaking dangerous because it's that motor, which is just a glorious engine in a car that is just completely not set up to handle it. And so the Camry V6 goes shooting off for the horizon, and you're like, oh, crap.
I have made a poor decision.
It's like when the guys who would go hunting for whales would actually get the harpoon in the whale. It's called the Nantucket Sleigh Ride. And then the whale decides to dive, and they're playing out the line as fast as they can and dumping water on it so it doesn't catch on fire. And the whale is like taking the boat along for a very fast ride. That's what the Camry V6 is like. The Accord V6 is not like that at all. It's set up very well to handle the power. The chassis is really well set up. It's very well damped. It's got just the right amount of stiffness in the springs, I feel. You know, it feels really silky how everything reacts to the road. That's not saying that it's soft riding, because I think Honestly, it leans towards its stiff side for some people, but it's not like it's sleepwalking, which is sort of how the Camry drives. You know, it's like it's been snoring and you've startled it awake by elbowing it in the ribs or something when you spur the Camry. The Accord's not like that. And it's really solid. It's a very solid structure. So I dig it. I didn't think I was going to like it as much as I do.
I will say, you know, I said this, you know, before. If I were seriously looking at the V6 coupe with a 6-speed manual, which is a great transmission, I would probably consider that over the equivalent V6 Mustang, just in terms of, you know, fun to drive, fairly practical, decent resale, etc. However, the Accord is loud and is not a quiet vehicle. She's pretty loud.
It's not
in terms
that
of
loud.
It's pretty bad.
I don't find it objectionable.
And the steering is miserable.
Okay,
Dan, does it drive better than a Fusion?
That's the question, because I haven't driven the 2013 Fusion. The 2013 Fusion better bring it against
this
car.
I haven't driven this Accord, so we're two ships passing in the night here.
The one thing the Fusion doesn't have is a V6.
That's true. But it has really tight handling that you'd be hard-pressed to get another car that handles like that in the family sedan set.
The thing that this Accord feels like, it feels like the old Accords. It feels like there's a Prelude hiding under there somewhere, which clearly it's a much bigger car than those were, but it's got that Honda mojo that I feel was kind of missing from the last generation Accord.
Sure, I think this was absolutely a redemptive model for them. I mean, I went to this first drive, and you know, I was the kicked puppy of the Honda fandom crowd. You know, I had been disappointed so many times by the company with, you know, the CRZ and the Civic and them offing the NSX and all the rest of that, the S2000. Came into the Accord thinking it was just going to deliver the same, just sort of middle of the road crap, and it was really sharp. It's a good car, and it feels like Honda of old. But yeah, the steering kind of ruined the whole shindig for me. It's
okay,
not,
explain that. Explain.
It's beyond synthetic. It's just weird. There's zero feedback whatsoever. It's incredibly light. It's entirely detached from the rest of the car, and it's such a damn shame because the rest of the car drives so well.
I understand what you're saying. I didn't feel that it was that bad, but then again, you know, I'm not driving all of them and competitors and stuff back to back, so I thought it was livable. It's definitely...
No, it's totally livable, and I think what made it worse was how good the rest of the car was. I think if that steering had been in the Camry, I wouldn't have batted an eye. Or the Camry.
That steering is worse than the Camry. The Camry steering is like old 70s Mopar, like
right.
Plymouth Valiant light.
Right. So those are my two complaints on the car: the freaking loud interior and the crappy steering.
It is loud. I think part of that is the tires, but I didn't find it as objectionable apparently as you did. So, and I'm surprised that we've turned the tables here. You're complaining about a car that's loud that I find is okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
What happened to you, Zach?
I don't know. Maybe you were just deafened by the power of the V6.
What's that, Sonny?
Mm-hmm. you and your cat.
That's about right.
No, the other thing that too, this is a really good looking car.
It is. It's really,
really,
sharp.
Really good looking, and it's the second generation of BMW-ness being put into the Accord, because the last Accord looked like they had a lot of 5 Series in it, and this also looks like it has a bit of 5 Series. It's kind of hard to put modern design themes into a car and not spit out modern 5 Series. I parked next to a Hyundai Genesis today, and I took a picture of the back of them because they're pretty much identical.
Oh yeah, it's uncanny.
Yeah.
Here's the thing though, does the Accord, it has like that two-tier like infotainment cluster, like two screens going on in the center. Is that for just the hybrid, or is that for the conventionally powered?
That's all of them.
No, it's yeah.
That's terrible. That's like, hey, I know we've been getting a lot of complaints about the weird two-tier futuristic dash in the Civic. Let's try something like that in the Accord. That's a brilliant idea.
Honda loves their screens, man. They just just love to throw LCDs in a car and just hope for the best.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I bemoan in pretty much every vehicle these days is the proliferation of LCD screens, because you can never dim them enough to not be polluting the cockpit with light.
Right.
And it just...
You just don't know how to find the setting.
No, I found the settings. It's unnecessary. And the Accord has a little LCD touchscreen that's closer, a small one, like a 4-inch screen for the radio controls. And that's the only way you can tune it.
Right. There's no dial.
I don't want to be careening down the road trying to hit the touchscreen just to change. Like, that's a place where I've realized, okay, it's probably cheaper to put all those functions into one screen than it is to put a bunch of buttons and find places. It makes the car that much more distracting to operate, I think. And I realize that it's an ancillary piece of equipment. And buttons are somewhat going away. Fine. But figure out which are the important buttons and which aren't. And I'm kind of on this button rant, so I'll stop. I also found that the nav is only okay, which is surprising for a brand new car. You know, the nav could be better, and it completely hated my Android phone to the point where it would pair just fine, but then I would try to make a call, and it would call out. Person on the other end couldn't hear me. I couldn't hear them. When I would cancel the call, then the radio volume would not work.
Oh, yeah?
Like, it wouldn't. I would have to stop, shut off the car, and turn it back on.
Yeah, and I felt like a grown-up.
Don't you mean fanboy? I think you miss.
No. I am not a fanboy. I'm just wearing my big boy pants. Have an iPhone.
You know, there's an iPhone in my household, and that's fine. It's wonderful. It's easy to use. I didn't pay for my Android phone, so I'm happy to use it.
Okay, all I'm saying is, you know what? The benefit of having the phone that everybody thinks is the latest and greatest is all the automakers know to make sure the phone is their car is calibrated to handle that phone.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good idea, quite honestly. I think it's a good idea to make sure that legacy devices are supported by your infotainment system. Because not everybody is like George Kennedy with the latest and greatest phone. You probably camp out at Apple.
No, untrue. Utterly
untrue. Patently untrue.
Lies, patent lies.
Get you, consumerism.
All right, we friggin' beat on the Accord.
All right, so let's beat on the Fit, because that's our first topic, and they're adding more Fits to the lineup. What do you think?
I'm stoked about this. This is good news. How is this anything but bad news?
I think it's good news.
Yeah, right? It's good news.
I think it's good news.
That was very tentative.
Question mark?
Come on. When I see this, the first thing I think of is how, you know, Toyota started expanding the Prius brand, which is a smart maneuver. You know, you have that brand cachet and you expand based upon that. It's almost like in Hollywood, where there are no new movies, there's just sequels upon sequels and rehashing of old ideas. The only way to sort of jump into a market and expand with new cars is to, like, take an existing brand cachet and spread out from there. It's almost, unless you have a car styled like the Veloster, it's very difficult to just jump into a market and say, hey, look at me, and set the world on fire.
You know, I think that's a pretty tough analogy to swallow. The reason why there's no new movies from big studios is because they're risk averse. And so they're just going to
keep... automakers aren't?
No, automakers are, but automakers also need to put out a good product where movie studios clearly do not.
remind me to tell you about my viewing of the latest Transformers this evening.
Yeah. But I get what you're saying. You know, the Fit has established an identity. It sounds like they're being kind of coy, though, where they're saying, well, we're going to build new models off the Fit. They already build several models off the Fit. It sounds more like, hey, we're expanding Fit production. We're moving into Mexico, and we're going to build more models for the U.S. market. They didn't say necessarily new ones, did they?
I mean, I think, what was it? They're going to bring over a sedan version, which probably just means they'll rebadge the Honda City.
You're right.
Exactly.
Which looks like a shrunken Civic.
And a crossover of some ilk.
Well, they have, yeah, and they have, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you, Zach.
No, it's perfectly fine. What's I wouldn't expect anything less, Dan.
Okay.
What's odd about the crossover is that's basically what the Fit is already. Yeah, and I know it parades around as a little hatchback, but the truth is it's pretty much just a little CUV. It's just got lots of storage, and it doesn't ride all that high.
Do you think that's called the CrossFit?
Sorry.
Crickets.
I see what you did there, George.
Yeah, that's nice. I think part of it is, too, the Fit is on the high end of the price side, so moving production to Mexico brings it down. Instead of producing them in Japan, they've got multi-passenger versions of it already. You know, there was the Fit Shuttle. There's the Honda Freed, which is based on the Fit. It's more of like a little, more like a Honda 5. I mean, a Mazda 5 than the Fit. So I'm not sure whether they're going to throw some crossoverness at it in some way. Kind of like
has there ever been like a compact crossover that succeeded here in the States?
The Suzuki Samurai. It succeeded until something.
Okay, no, yeah, no, that's true. That's entirely true. Samurai did pretty well. They sold a crap ton of those.
Yeah, and then they were like,
that was like a legitimate SUV, though. That was like a.
That was not a crossover by any stretch. Yeah,
that was like a bare bones. I'm going to go bash through the woods.
A successful crossover, XJ Cherokee.
That's way big. What are you doing?
And it's not on the inside. It's not.
It's an SUV.
That is a crossover. It's unibody.
Oh, Dan, drunk.
All right. Well, what would you call a Kahana Element then? I mean, is that crossover?
The elephant's not.
It's also big. I mean, it's
enormous.
Yeah, yeah. Think of how small the Fit is. I mean, I'm thinking of things like the C-Max, which is still a fairly large vehicle.
I don't think the C-Max is going to be tremendously successful. But
right, nor do I. That's why I'm trying to think of anything that has done well in this segment.
I think it's kind of a new segment or a new spin on the segment where we've had I say the XJ Cherokee sort of in jest because it's a unibody four-wheel drive vehicle, which is kind of a very quick definition of a crossover. But they're flipping now to it's a station wagon. It's what the SUV had been. In the 90s, it's replacing that, where it's becoming a much more civilized, normal, everyday vehicle versus what they had been, where we were talking about, like, the Samurai. So you're seeing it change into things like the Buick Encore, which I don't know where they want to sell that car. Is that supposed to compete with the Countryman, or is it supposed to compete with the Cooper? Like, that kind of thing is more of what we're going to see. And so I can see Honda maybe looking at that going, oh, we have some weird-ass thing we can stick in that niche.
True.
It would be good to have more Fits because I think the Fit is delightful. I would like to have cheaper Fits. What I really would love to see is a hybrid Fit.
Really? Really? That's the kind of evil you want to put on the Fit? Since Honda has such a riotous track record with hybrids, you want to see a freaking hybrid Fit, Dan, I swear you do these things just to make me irate. I swear to God you do.
They work really well. No, I think that the Fit is the right blend of space, size, and fun to drive, where the Insight is a chore to drive, the CRZ is too small, and while it can be fun to drive, it's just generally not a very good car otherwise. So the Fit is an actual, like, useful car that people buy, too. It's not this weird sort of outlier like those two models are. So to have a hybrid version of it, I think, could be successful.
And yeah, but it's not going to be a real hybrid. It's going to be a freaking IMA disaster.
Or they're going to bring out a sort of crossover with it, and they're going to do what they're going to do with the NSX, and they're going to put the electric motor in the rear, driving the rear axle, sort of a split, you know, through-the-road hybrid.
How's the weather in Fantasyland, Dan? Is it awesome? I bet it's fantastic.
What would you expect to see then?
I expect them to put an IMA in it, like they do everything. And it sucks, and it's expensive, and it adds nothing to the package. It's just miserable.
Well, I have nothing to say to that, I think.
I know, because reality blows. Moving on.
George, you're awfully silent. What do you
think? I'm just shaking my head over here. It's all right.
At which one of us? Both? I don't know.
Everything. I guess my only comment is that, you know, unfavorable conversion rates for like yen to dollar don't necessarily mean that production is going to come to America. They'll just as easily go to Mexico for the, you know, the less expensive production costs.
Well, yeah, and that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, and I feel like I've heard more news after news after news of factories opening in Mexico, and the whole, like, you know, conversion rates will bring some production to, you know, the U.S. isn't really coming into fruition as much as we hope it would.
Okay.
Crickets.
That's because who can argue with the awesomeness that is George Kennedy's opinion?
It's true. It's damn truth.
There it is.
Before we move on, we are brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com.
So, let's move on from the riotous fun of a Honda Fit Hybrid to the riotous fun of Big Brother spying on you and mandating black boxes in vehicles. This, well, I do not like.
Well, it's coming no matter what, whether you do like it or not, and they were doing it without being mandated to either. I mean, 90% of new cars already had it in there.
We're telling you, which is worse.
Right, exactly. And I mean, yes, there are definitely some Big Brother issues, and, you know, people with their tinfoil hats like Dan will definitely get up in arms about it.
You know.
But I guess for, I mean, when you look at the data that the automakers want to have, the data that the insurance companies want to have, it was inevitable whether we like it or not, I guess.
Okay. Here's my issue with it. It has nothing to do with the fact that there are event data recorders in cars. My issue with it is it's the very same kind of thing that they were forcing up here in Massachusetts with Right to Repair. Let's create a standard that all automakers need to work to meet. We don't need that. They've already got it. The automakers are using that data for their purposes. It almost strikes me as treading very close to unlawful search and seizure with a vehicle.
Oh,
that will, no, I'm serious. I'm not being a sort of conspiracy theorist, but look at it and see, you know, it just gets close to that sort of territory for me, and I don't
How do you see that as unlawful search and seizure? I'm curious.
Okay, so you get pulled over, mm-hmm. right, because you go blowing by a cop at 35 and a 25. Mm-hmm. Cop sidles up to your car and says, oh no, even better, you're not doing anything. You hit a random... You hit like one of those random things where they put out where they're pulling cars over looking for DUIs.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't been drinking, but you just left somewhere and you hoonded up the driveway or something,
mm-hmm.
or did whatever. Anyway, plugs the car in to his little reader, which spits out GPS data, spits out you were going, you know, this fast and this kind of.
There's no plausible cause there. So your scenario. Paints this portrait of an individual being sucked into a situation where there's no probable cause for the law enforcement officer to search your black box. Right?
You know, though, Dan brings up a good point, though, because for cell phone use right now, there's a lot of, you know, using the GPS data from cell phones as being, you know, allowed into court cases that might not necessarily fall into our, you know, search and seizure laws. And so laws do need to be enacted to protect the average citizen and, you know, to put the data in the property of the citizen, not the property of the automaker, which it would just turn over to law enforcement.
Which I entirely agree. I entirely agree that there needs to be a law structure around this data to assign it to the owner of the vehicle as their property.
And there may already be. So let me just say it. My scenario is completely like...
My scenario is if Dan Roth and family are driving along in their S60 and they get broadsided by some idiot who's just flying, and the guy says, well, Dan pulled out in front of me. Well, now there's a record of what this guy was doing when he hit you and your family.
Isn't it going to be pretty obvious when
that's
they get
not a
reconstruction team down
listen,
there and they see there's no braking skid marks and my car moved 300 feet?
You say that, but I have been sued by someone who clearly destroyed their vehicle ahead of me, and I got cited for it, and it was a shitty situation. And having that cold, hard data to prove exactly what happened would have meant the world.
Okay. Well, there's a really good example in 07, Massachusetts Lieutenant Governor Tim Murray was driving home at like 5 in the morning.
That wasn't 07. That was like, that was like 2010. That was okay. Not too long ago. 2010, yeah. 2011.
Right. At any rate, look, Lieutenant Governor Tim Murray says he hit a patch of ice and flipped and totaled his car at 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
30 miles away from his house.
No.
To get the black box? What? Okay. I
drive that stretch of road every day. It was after one of the ice storms. And he lives in Worcester. He was in Sterling. I drive on 190 in Sterling virtually every day. I drive right by where he wrecked that car. He was doing like 90 miles an hour. He says he fell asleep.
Right. And the black box says that he hit 106 before flipping the car. Now, he said, you know, that he was doing the speed limit. But, you know, now he says one thing, but the data says another.
Right.
So if he was doing something nefarious, well, then now they have data that they can use to prove
it. Well, they have data sort of and sort of not. I mean, there's no witnesses, and even the people who see this kind of thing a lot say, yeah, when you fall asleep, you actually tend to lay off the accelerator instead of flooring it. But whatever. The fact of the matter is that you wind up in this place where you have the data, but without interpretation, without witnesses, you still only have the data. Is that enough at a certain point to say, yes, you were doing this, even when you perhaps weren't?
Well, it qualifies the opinions, or it qualifies the he said, she said stuff.
Right.
If exactly. What is being said bolsters the data, then it's a legit story. If it goes against that, then...
But
then
there are a lot of legit stories that run counter to what... Interpreting data
and that's
is
what,
going to.
That's see, what judges and juries are for. And I can't see this as anything but a help to both law enforcement and law-abiding citizens.
I say that as
someone who has in the past routinely broken traffic laws. It's going to be a good thing as long as consumers are protected.
Consumers are never...
Oh, Dan.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I do not have tinfoil in my hat. I'm not even wearing a hat. This strikes me as A, first of all, they want to implement a standard that all automakers must adhere to. There's more money that we're going to pay for. We're going to pay for that in every car because they've got to create software. They've got to create an interconnect standard. Does it go through the OBD port or how else does it get out there? And what information is in it? And how is it accessed? And yeah, who owns it? And all of those things need to be figured out. Guess what? We're paying for that. We're paying for the Blue Ribbon Commission or whatever that goes into it. So it just bugs me. I understand that the cars should have some sort of data logging capability. They already do. Most cars do. 90% of new cars have it. Okay. But to create this sort of blanket standard, I don't see how it's going to make us any more safe, any better off to create some kind of new standard that then needs to get implemented.
Well, standardization would hypothetically mean that you'd have interchangeable parts.
No.
You know, that which would bring the cost down.
No, it means that there's a standard interface. It's like Ethernet. That's what the standardization would be. There's,
so would you want like, one cable okay. for, you know, one cable for, you know, cars and, PCs in Massachusetts and
It's like OBD2 is a standard, right? So you plug in an OBD2 scanner, bang, it spits out the generic codes and some can read the manufacturer specific codes. It's not Ford has a black box standard, Chrysler has a black box standard, GM has one now, which is how it is now, where they all have data logging. It's accessed differently. Different pieces of data are recorded. That's so they're going to bring it all together and say,
yeah.
Let's do this.
And if the insurance company needs 36 different black box readers to go to 36 different car brands, they're going to pass that cost on to you.
Yeah, so... They're going to pass the cost of everything on to you.
you really
just undermined your own argument.
No. Honestly.
Cars are going to cost us more, but I want my insurance to be more instead. That's what I want.
That tinfoil hat, Dan.
I don't like it. I don't like it, and I don't like it. It seems like a security risk, and I don't like it. I mean, people can hack your cell phone and find out all kinds of stuff about you with his GPS.
Oh, my God.
I don't like it. What do you care, Zach? You drive cars with carburetors.
I know. Weird.
Yeah, listen, Dan, if you have a problem with it, get an old car.
I have an old car.
Keep driving your S60. There you go.
I intend to. So, there, I just... But I'm not a legal expert, and I think that was very clearly pointed out through that.
Last saying, it's not as bad as you're making it out to be.
I don't think it's going to be, like, you know, the end of the world or anything. It just it seems like something that we don't really need. It's unnecessary.
More data is always good.
Except for when it's not.
It's only not if you're doing something you shouldn't be doing.
That is not true. That is not true.
Zach, do you think his tinfoil hat is in the shape of a baseball hat or like a sea captain?
No, I think Dan's smarter than that. I think he lined his roof with tinfoil. So right inside.
I need a roof. I'm working on that. It's just there are people who wind up in legal trouble, who wind up incarcerated for things they didn't do.
That's very true.
It happens a lot. This, to me, looks like it makes it easier for you to get railroaded than it does for you, you
know,
to...
On the same side of that coin, it's also easier to defend yourself with that knowledge.
Yeah. I don't know.
If you're in the right, the dad will back you up.
Right. It's a double-edged sword, you know? And again, well, that's what...
not always back you up, though.
That's what judges and juries are for. That's what interpretation is for.
Infallible. And then you get
stuck. Dan, That's what
appeals are for.
Exactly. It's a human system. That's why you have interpretation. That's why it's not just, well, this is what the computer says, so you're off to Rikers. It doesn't work that way. Anyway, we're come on.
Okay. All right. We didn't even talk about the data that's going to go into it or any of that stuff.
Don't let facts get in your way now, Dan, please.
Yeah. Okay.
You want to talk about that? You want to talk about?
I think we probably beat this to death, our opinion, quite honestly. So let's just talk about GM pickups. Because they have too many, they say. Although I think something else is going on, speaking of conspiracies.
Yeah, you're really steering away from your whole conspiracy theorist persona. But no, this and I say this utterly sarcastically, is an utter shocker that GM misread the tea leaves and produced too many pickup trucks. Like, that was the same thing with excess inventory that was happening right before, you know, all of their, you know, the troubles in the late 2000s. It just seems like, you know, from my standpoint, it just seems like them misreading, you know, the market trends.
So just a recap. For those who may not have read the post that I wrote, basically GM has found itself with a ridiculous supply of 2012 pickups. So it has a 139-day supply, and typically automakers shoot for like a 60 to 75-day supply of vehicles, which translates to 245,853 pickups just sitting around looking for a home.
Right. But here's what I think is happening, and this may be wrong, but on Thursday, they've already put this out on Facebook and out on the web that they're going to show their new truck to the world. So,
why would it help to have a crap ton of old
because
trucks?
They've got to switch over, so they need inventory to sell as the plant switches over in the meantime.
All I see is 245,000 units that are going to be called the Silverado and Sierra Classic as of this time next year.
Perhaps.
He's polishing up those classic badges already.
Oh, man. I love that like no other automaker has done that ever, done the classic thing.
It's, the Malibu Classic.
They had a car that was called just the Classic.
Really?
Yeah. It was the late 90s Malibu.
Yep.
When they brought out the funny mustachioed Malibu, they had the old one still in production. They called it the Classic.
It didn't even deserve to have like a proper name to it. They just called it Classic.
You quite honestly, it wasn't a terrible.
Oh, look at this car! It's Classic Chevy.
Classic Chevy. Yuck! Yuck! Yuck!
I don't know. Maybe it's just me looking at it, going, well, they're going to need to switch the plant over, and they're going to need trucks to sell. Maybe they've got too many trucks to sell.
You're giving them a lot of credit. Wouldn't they have said that if that was what they were doing? Because right now,
what they do when they do something right is they beat everybody to death with how they've done something right.
Right now, they're like, "Yep, we got a crap ton of pickups, and I guess we're going to stop building those, and we're going to really try not to put incentives on it."
Yeah, like, good luck with that.
That's what they're saying right now.
But we're going to tell you about the brand new truck that's coming too. So,
and, you know, I know, you know, hindsight 2020, all the rest of that crap, but everybody knew they were coming out with new trucks. Everyone knew. So if anybody was coming into 2012 who knew a blessed thing about the trucks, they were holding off and waiting for the 2013s. So why keep cranking them at record pace?
That's absolutely right. And I think, I mean, they become victim of the fact that they tout, you know, promo stuff way too early. I mean, look at how early the Camaro came out to when it went to production. And obviously, we haven't seen the next Silverado yet, but you've heard about it ad nauseum, and which means the consumer has too.
Well, so, wait a minute. What have you heard about the new Silverado? Because I haven't heard much at all. Maybe
you've seen spy shots after spy shots, and you know the same ramp up that you would expect to come out of a new GM pickup. You know, well before its actual debut.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think they misunderestimated.
Misunderestimated. Awesome. Nice.
They definitely did.
How many people were going to hold out for the next truck? And this is going to hurt them because they're going to have all this excess inventory that they're going to have to discount heavily to move. And that might hurt the sales of the new pickup.
Maybe it's time for me to go buy a Silverado.
That's what I was just going to say. Maybe it's time for me to just ship one of the Volvos off to Valhalla and get myself a nice discount on a
truck.
Because they're still nice trucks. I like
them. Yeah, no, they're awesome. Just the interior sucks, and drivetrains really aren't all that new. And no, they're fine.
Listen, you talk yourself out of it. They're great, except for all of the pieces they're made with.
No, I think they're as a just, you know, bouncing around work truck, I think they're great. It's just they've been clearly outclassed by Ford and Chrysler at this point, which who thought that was ever going to happen, especially in the latter part.
Well, the last time Ram really made a big splash was the late 90s, mm-hmm. when they came out with the big rig looking Ram,
right,
like 94, to replace the Ram that they'd had since like 72.
Oh yeah, and remember Twister came out, and you had that new Ram.
Say that, yeah,
that was awesome. That was probably some of the best product placement Chrysler has ever done.
There were a lot of Chrysler vehicles in that movie. All the minivans for the evil guy there, Carrie Ewells.
They flipped the J10. That was that tragedy.
That was too bad. Anyway. But so if they really were as smart as, I don't know who's giving them credit for that, they planned on this, then why is it going to potentially cost them $1 billion in lost revenue? That's
sorry. Yeah. You know, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
That is more money than we'll ever make combined.
Yeah.
I would love to be all cocky right now and be like, speak for your lonesome, Dan Roth.
But that's no, you know I'm correct.
No, that's right. That's who knows? George may be selling cocaine on the side, so you could be wrong.
I'm sitting on a Scrooge McDuck style pool of coins.
You know what I never understood was how he could dive. Well, that's true. Your name is Kennedy, and you are a third, and only rich not people related, have to have that relation. Suffix. I don't.
Says the man he was talking about his cabin cruiser earlier.
Yeah, listen, it was okay. It was like 1980 something. It was a wooden boat. Nobody wanted wooden boats after fiberglass came out because they're such a pain. It was old.
No, you're not an elitist Northeastern, supposedly.
No, not at all.
Rumoredly.
Listen, I don't even have any boats anymore. I don't want them. I want the engines. Marine engines I dig.
Dan fears the sea.
Yeah.
Keep your eyes open. GM's going to be freaking throwing cash at pickups here before too long.
So. Silverado 1500 Classic. Cannot wait.
I would like to see, actually, we should do an experiment and see how cheaply we can get a truck with the most content.
That's a great idea, actually.
Let's use your money, George Kennedy III.
I was thinking we'd use AOL's money, but that works too.
Yeah, because you know what? If we do it my way, then we'll be on Craigslist for like $500. So that's also a fun experiment.
All right.
I can help you out there. Just saying.
Yeah, Zach has a good Craigslist truck.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, but we're not going to talk about it because we don't want somebody to swipe it from him so he can't put the Marine 454 that he's going to get and put in it.
Yeah, I'm going to die.
I've got it all worked. So let's stay on the truck tip and head to Jeep Grand Cherokee land. They've got a diesel that's going to...
Getting a diesel. Getting a 3-liter diesel with over 400 pound-feet of torque.
And it's in the wrong car.
I know. Well, that's the first thing I saw.
Be patient.
Well, here's what I'm worried about. Okay, so they say that the next generation Grand Cherokee, which is, you know, headed for a debut at the Detroit Auto Show, is going to come with the diesel that Europe's been getting for a long time. 3-liter
Tory diesel, correct?
Right, yeah. Correct. 3-liter turbo diesel. But it's going in the Grand Cherokee, which to me, first, awesome. That's going to be great. I love the Grand Cherokee. That's cool. Diesel seems cool. I have no idea what kind of fuel economy it's going to get, but 400 pound-feet of torque, it's going to be more powerful than the Hemi, which is fine by me. How expensive is it going to be? Is it going to be so prohibitively expensive that no one buys it? And they're like, well, see, nobody wanted a diesel, so we're not putting it in the Wrangler. And then I have to go around punching Chrysler executives in the face.
Who would you start with?
I don't know. Whichever one I get my hands on first.
The slowest.
That's right. The weakest of the pack.
That's right. Zach Bowman, you're an automotive bully.
Yeah, well,
see,
good.
The powertrain chief, you'd save him for last.
That's right. You. Sorry.
This could just go into B-movie territory.
No, you make a really good point, though, that, I mean, depending on cost, this might have been a good maneuver to bring this engine over in the Grand Cherokee first, because you start getting those scales, and I don't really know how economies of scale work, but hypothetically, if you move enough units, then you could maybe get the cost down to where you could bring it into the Wrangler.
Well, right. Okay, diesel is a premium powertrain. People will pay extra money for it. People will already pay extra money for the spiffy Grand Cherokee. The question I have is whether it's going to be available on, say, the Laredo trim or whatever it is, instead of the, you know, if it's going to have the Jack Overland. Palance trim with the fancy, fancy leather and all that, the Overland, you're not going to sell too many of them. But if you can have it on the mid-level and the high-end, you stand a better chance. There's people who love the CRD Liberties. So yeah, I don't doubt that there's a market for this.
And I hope they don't screw it up. American manufacturers just have this tendency to really bonehead some diesel placement. They do. I don't understand why they do this.
It's kind of like, I mean, we can sit here and say that we want it in the Wrangler, but we don't know how many units they would actually move. And it is a funny, like, you know, you'll see it in service vehicles, but then you'll also see it in, like, you know, a Mercedes ML. It's a hard thing to read to figure out where to place it perfectly, because it's no cheap thing to set up.
Keep in mind that the VM Motori engine is not the CRD. It's not the old Mercedes diesel. So it's a different engine.
I know that.
Okay. All right. But I think, too, what we're seeing here is the tip of the spear. We want it in the Wrangler. That's probably coming, probably for 2014. It's probably coming to the Ram. They've put the V6 in the Ram. Clearly, the diesel V6 is going to fit in there. That's probably also 2014. So I hope they don't make us wait until sort of the next Wrangler refresh, which may be as late as 2017.
Oh, good.
Yeah. But this gets the engine in this market. And the engineering has been done to put it into the Wrangler. So it's not that it's that big a deal at this point to basically spec out create a Euro spec Wrangler in the U.S. It needs to pass the emissions hurdles and stuff. And they need to figure out what they're going to price it at and how many of them they're going to sell.
This is probably a smart move for Chrysler in terms of CAFE for Jeep, I would imagine.
Yes, probably a very smart move when you consider the fuel economy that the Hemi gets.
Yeah, somewhere between a freaking tragedy and an abysmal tragedy.
Well, it's also a smart move for pricing, too, because if it is, in fact, an expensive thing to in terms of a value add, then you do the hybrid thing that they do, and where you offer like a contented up version of the car, and that's your diesel model.
Well, and I think that that's where it makes more sense in the Grand Cherokee, because people are used to expensive Grand Cherokees. They're somewhat used to expensive Wranglers, but I think that there's a huge contingent of Wrangler buyers who would be like, I'm not paying that. I'll just get the
I just got super giddy at the notion of a turbo diesel Rubicon.
I was just thinking the same thing.
That was probably the best thing to happen to me.
I was actually really visualizing the 10th anniversary Rubicon from the LA show with the diesel in it.
This makes me all teary-eyed.
You know, you can make your own, Zach.
Oh, I know. I have the technology.
But I think the thing is, we like the notion of, like, even if we don't have the money to, hypothetically, if we had the money, walking into a dealership with a suitcase full of cash and being like, I will take my diesel Wrangler, sir, and I will take it now.
Yep.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see when we get the diesel Grand Cherokee, and it's going to be awesome. You know it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be fantastic. All the torques from no RPM.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be in the press fleet as a fully loaded vehicle anyway, so anyone that we drive is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, you know, back to that word.
Back to that word. I'm more okay to let this ride.
All right. Well, so we should move on to questions because we've kind of killed the topics and blathered on about tinfoil hats and whatnot. So we had an email question actually from down your way, Zach, Kentucky.
It's Kentucky and me.
No, I you're in Tennessee, but Kentucky's not far away.
That's true.
You're closer to Kentucky than I am, so that's why I say down your way.
All right.
Anyway, Calvin asks, what are you guys' thoughts on Consumer Reports calling out Ford for false MPG claims with the Fusion Hybrid and C-Max? Go.
Well, I think is... Oh, sorry. Do you want to...
No. After you. Go.
I think that as we... You know, the MPGE thing is a new thing, and, you know, I don't think testing is perfect, and, you know, real-world driving experience is going to differ very much from what the MPG testing is at first until this thing moves to a place where it's the most realistic testing.
Yeah, but when does it ever get to be the most realistic? How do you create a...
When you have a bigger sample space, the longer you do the testing, the more realistic driving conditions employ.
These are EPA ratings, so they're done to a spec. You see, is the spec the flaw? Because they just redid it not too long ago.
Yeah, I don't know. You're waiting for some glorious answer from me.
I am, George. Yeah, fine. What does Zach have to say about it?
You know, I think that, my opinion of Consumer Reports is a little...
They're good guys. Come on. They have
they serve a purpose.
Okay, here's the question, though. Do you ever meet or exceed the fuel economy ratings in a vehicle?
You can't ask me that, Dan. Good Lord, I drive 1 foot down the throttle body at all times. What kind of question is that?
Sounds like
occasionally, yes. Occasionally it happens. If I'm on a long highway run and I'm just stuck the cruise on, it happens fairly regularly. But, you know, around town, you can forget that noise. I will say that from what I've heard from the guys who have driven the Focus Electric, that car doesn't get anywhere near the sort of range that Ford advertises. In half.
That's not good.
Yep.
Well, because that brings it down to where the Prius plug-in would be then,
right?
Like 11. And they were advertising, what, like 21, 22?
Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Ford's going to listen to this if they do, and they're going to be like, you know what, we need to talk about that. So I would love to hear.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
And we'll listen to you say we don't talk about future products for too long.
Fuel economy to me isn't a huge deal. Like the EPA mileage thing, it's a spec and everybody sort of tests it. It's a charade for the most part. Just because you know that you're not going to get that fuel economy, and that's done, you know, with pure gasoline. I'm stuck. I can't buy anything that doesn't have ethanol in it, which completely kills fuel economy for me up here. So I know it's a big deal to a lot of buyers. I tend to go for how the car drives first, and fuel economy, it's important, but it's not the sole deciding factor. So I often find myself wishing for a vehicle that returned more than 30 miles per gallon on the highway, but it's still nice to drive at 26 and a half, so...
30, he says.
Yeah. And I've said horrible. This before, too, though. Like, people get really hung up over, like, you know, very specific specs, you know, horsepower versus horsepower and price versus price and fuel economy versus fuel economy. Buying a vehicle should be a holistic experience where, you know, you're taking all the factors in equally to your buying decision. And if you're going to, you know, say nix to one car because it just didn't have the fuel economy you were looking for, you know, that better not be in spite of a bunch of other really, really positive attributes.
Well, I think people are going to weigh it for themselves, and they're going to figure it out, you know, what is most important to them. And for some people, it is the fuel economy. It doesn't happen to be for me. And we actually had a question from the Q&A that sort of dovetails with this, where Bill from Missouri asks where he can find real-world mile per gallon numbers. He's lost faith with the calculated MPG numbers posted by the manufacturers. So one good resource is fuelly.com, but bear in mind that that only works where the sample size is large enough and there's enough data. So I actually looked up my own car, and where I'm getting 26.5 on average, they were getting like 25.5, which is probably right on in terms of a larger sample size. I'm just one driver, so that's a good place to look. Most of the publications quote observe fuel economy, especially on their fleet stuff, but again, it's not really the most ideal sample set because they got their boot to the floor most of the time.
Yeah, but that's realistic.
It's realistic for auto riders, but it's not realistic for most people. You know, I mean, we'll all compare and say, yes, we got 16 miles per gallon in the Juke. But I don't think that people who buy the Juke drive the Juke like we drive the Juke.
They should,
because they really enjoy it. But
yeah, so if they looked at our numbers, then they'd be pleasantly surprised when they get like a half an MPG more.
I don't know. It's the other place you might want to look is forums for models on the web. They can be helpful.
And fueleconomy.gov actually has a space where owners can report their own fuel economy, and it's not just what, you know, the government is reporting.
And on that particular resource, a lot of the cars, when you go look it up, they'll have the EPA numbers, and then if they have a large enough sample space, they'll also provide what actual drivers are finding right below it.
Yeah, it does suck for a brand new model, though, like the Fusion Energy, for example. What, there is going to be no data out there. You are going to be the early adopter and
guinea pig.
Yeah, so enjoy it.
It's called beta tester.
Yeah, that's right. They're taking a software model to the car world, design, ship, test. So we'll move on to another.
What could go wrong?
Yeah. What could possibly go wrong? Clearly, you're just not using it correctly. So we have another question from Henry in Massachusetts, lovely Massachusetts. I don't know if we should call him Hank. Probably not. But he's driving across country from Boston to L.A., asking for good recommendations for must-drive roads, side attractions, etc. I guess he's going in January, so probably take the southern route. There's multiple southern routes, so it depends on how far south you want to go before you turn right, but whatever. He had in mind the Biltmore Castle, Blue Ridge Parkway, Austin, Texas, Grand Canyon. There's that, how you might want to prep the car, and any other suggestions for must-bring items. You guys have done lots of driving, so I figure this was a natural for us.
Yeah, have your iPhone or portable audio device totally hooked up brainlessly to your car so you're not futzing around while you're driving. That's the advice I would give. And have some good playlists ready to go.
No, I don't know if this is a solo drive or not. I tend to believe.
Oh, it doesn't matter. You're going to need something to cut that silence when you run out of things to talk about.
You're going to run out of things to talk about. You need to make sure that you have the right people driving with you so you don't run out of things to talk
about. Sometimes you don't have that choice.
I'm never riding with you again.
That's true.
Just that awkward silence will come up and I'll be like, what kind of playlist?
Scheming?
Should I add my playlist together?
Yeah. I think you should hit Tail of the Dragon.
Yeah. Ah, Jesus.
Okay, no. Zach doesn't think you should hit
Tail of the Dragon. No, you should probably do it just because it's one of those things that people like to do. And just keep in mind there are better roads out there. Do the Tail of the Dragon. Biltmore's fun. That's really cool. Blue Ridge Parkway is just an awesome drive. It's just going to soak up time. Speed limit is technically 45. It's not very well patrolled, and if you hit it in the middle of the week, you can scoot along a little bit quicker than that. And it is really, really, really gorgeous. Austin is cool. You really want to stop at Sedona if you're going out that way. Sedona is a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous town. A lot of cool little artsy stuff going on out there.
He's probably young, right? So it's probably like a couple. It's probably him and his girlfriend going. So what they should do is they should stop in Vegas and get hitched.
Don't
That's terrible.
But it's never not a terrible to idea. Dan.
Don't you get, ever.
Where else are you going to go? Like, how was your vacation? Awesome. We got married by Elvis.
Yeah, that's no. Oh my god.
And then
god,
you get maced by your new father-in-law.
That's why, like, you tell that's them good. Over just the hold phone. Like,
I'll
okay,
be
so
right back. I need
Boston,
to get my bear mace. That's right.
They're going from Boston, so that means, like, there's family probably there, and so you're going to L.A. So you call them from L.A. and you tell them, so they can't do anything about it. And you'd be like, yeah, so we got married, and then we had a $2 buffet, and then we had played the slots, and we won $500, so we're good. We'll talk to you next week.
You should not do that. You should go to Vegas.
Wait, come on. Where's the romance, Zach?
Nashville.
Not be in Vegas.
Nashville, actually, Nashville would be cool.
Nashville's a really cool town, and I can't stand country music to save my life, but the Country Music Hall of Fame is really cool. It is
Nashville
a
is not all country either.
It's not all country, but it is a cool town. Stay downtown if you can. There's some pretty cheap hotels within walking distance of, like, the Strip, and it's cool just to go down, walk around, eat some good food, hang out. Depending on how you go, Louisville, Kentucky is also a really cool town with a neat downtown scene. If you go as far south as Atlanta, that's a cool town. There's all sorts of neat little places out there.
You know, what I would recommend is to go to the roadtripamerica.com site and check out some of the stuff, because people have put trip itineraries and just sort of recounted their trips on there. And so you'll probably get a better idea than three of us rubes.
I will say a good idea if you're going to be putting down that kind of mileage, either have a credit card with you with a decent limit or carry a sizable lump of cash, typically $300 to $400, just in case you get stuck in a situation where you need help from someone.
Yeah.
Cash helps.
Cash and small bills in your sock next to the switchblade.
Not so much the latter. It's so unhelpful. So unhelpful. Just cash helps whether you're dealing with tow truck drivers that can significantly cut your bill. You know, those guys are typically willing to work with you a little bit if you've got cash on hand.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, AAA, okay, is helpful. They don't pay a ton, so a lot of drivers are happy to get cash. The other thing you might want to do is check out if your insurance has roadside assistance coverage on it, because you have to have insurance to drive the car if you're in Massachusetts. So check and see if you can add it, because usually it's like $5 a month or something, ludicrously cheap, compared to a much more expensive AAA Plus that will give you 100 miles of towing and whatever. You don't really need a ton of other stuff. I don't like, you know, people.
Make sure your spare has air in it. That's a obvious, because you don't want to get stuck on the side of the road and realize that you're just Shanghai'd there.
Yeah, that does suck. Water. You want to always make sure that you have some water, because if you get a flat tire in Death Valley or throw a rod or whatever, you're going to need to hydrate. So, but
otherwise, just have fun. It's going to be awesome. I'm super jealous.
In January, depending on how south or north your route is too, like if you're headed through Colorado, be aware that...
Bring a couple sleeping bags just in case.
It could snow. So you want to make sure, then the Colorado snow guys are probably better than, you know, the Texas snow guys if you're down a little further south. You know, like I said, there's multiple routes across the country, so just bear that in mind and keep an eye on the weather and whatnot, and yeah, it will be cool. Other than that, I don't know what to prepare your car for. I mean, take it in, make sure it's...
Drive it. Drive the pants off of it, so whatever breaks happens now and not in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, don't make sure you're not taking something like your prized Renault 11 that nobody's ever seen, because it's not going to be good. Make sure you've got a car that people are going to be aware of, because there's some weird stuff here in New England.
Also, if you're like, I don't know, if you're from New England then, or like the Boston area, they're like, they advertise on TV for places that we don't get up here, like Sonic. Just go there so you can say you did, so when you come back, you'd be the like topic of conversation. George, hey, how was Sonic?
Are you aware there's a Sonic in Saugus?
Wait, what?
You serious?
Yeah, George peels out right now.
I gotta go.
Yeah, you'll hear me until like the laptop and headset get out of Wi-Fi range. That's it, man.
Oh, also, if you're going west, there's Yellowstone. I mean, the Grand Canyon. Yeah, you definitely have to see that. But there's Yellowstone. So because you're gonna have like you're gonna go out and then come back. So
you can't do both. Yeah. Also, the other thing too is, I mean, if you're going out there to LA thinking you're gonna try In-N-Out for the first time. If you've had Five Guys, don't even bother because that's a million times better than In-N-Out.
Still do In-N-Out. It's a fun thing to do.
Isn't that the one with like Animal Style or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
Still not as good as Five Guys.
Still tasty. Yeah, if you come through Knoxville, give me a shout. I'll buy you a beer.
Really? Them, not me, right?
Well, maybe you. Like, you're ever going to come through Knoxville? That's not a thing that's going to happen.
Maybe. It may be one of the things.
Seems highly unlikely.
Probably.
But I will buy you a beer, Dan, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I might just come just for that. And I'm going to call you Shock Top because you look like the guy that's on the bottle.
I love Shock.
Yeah.
He loves probably a little strong. It's a good beer.
It's good stuff. It's got that fruity aftertaste to it.
As my former college roommate used to say, don't like no fruit in my beer. He's now a Marine.
Awesome. So he drinks Bud Light. A lot.
Oh, yeah, and Bud Light.
A lot of Bud Light. All right, so TW in Wisconsin wants to know over the next 5 to 10 years what brands we predict will leave the U.S. market and what brands will enter.
Mitsubishi?
I think Mitsubishi might exit stage left. If Shunk were here, I'd make him do his impression of Snagglepuss.
I remember like a year ago they were talking about, you know, going whole hog on EVs and you know, that sort of thing. If they did that, that'd be the only thing that would keep them in this market. But it doesn't sound like they've been.
No one buys EVs. That's the thing. No one buys hybrids. No one buys EV. Even now, they make up such a small percentage of the overall automotive market. I seriously doubt that would be enough to keep Mitsubishi's head above water, especially given the cost of investment and production.
Yeah. I think if you're buying a hybrid or an EV, you're buying a Toyota.
Yeah, you're buying a Prius.
That's well, yeah, proven track record. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, there's also a good chance that, you know, I mean, maybe, who knows, Smart could be gone too in a little while.
Oh, is there such a world? Does that future? I now have reason to live. I have reason
yeah,
to live.
And if I'm wrong, then I'm sorry that I ever got your hopes up.
To see the day when Smart sails across the pond back from whence it came.
Finally come here would be Mahindra.
Yeah, you'd like to see it come here. Why? Have you?
Just because it'd be sweet to have a car that has more in common with my, you know, old 86 4Runner than it does, you know.
Yeah, but see, the problem with that is that you're not going to actually, like, buy one. You think it's cool, expensive. And the people who are going to buy them aren't going to buy a Mahindra. They're going to buy Toyota.
Oh, sorry.
I don't know. It would be cool.
I don't think Mahindra is going to happen just because they've sort of, you know, salted the earth legally in terms of, you know, screwing around with their American importer and then backing out at the last minute and all the rest of that.
Yeah, Global Vehicles is unhappy. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, what do you think? You think Lincoln's actually going to stay around or just sort of die?
Personally?
Yeah, personally.
I don't know. That brand just makes me sad. Continuously makes me sad. As a former Lincoln owner, you know, it just breaks my heart to see that brand just sort of trundle along and regurgitate Ford crap.
Yeah. I don't know whether it's going to stick around much past the next 7 years or whether it's, you know, maybe they'll toss out a really great product that turns it around. I don't know that the MKZ is that product. But in terms of stuff coming here, I see mostly just stuff leaving. Like, I don't think we're going to see Peugeot or Renault re-enter the market.
Alpha
is flirted with that like over and over again. Do you think it's going to happen? Like,
I could see it coming as like a Chrysler premium brand. Couldn't you?
What do they have to sell? That
8C?
Yeah, 4C.
You know, a smaller sports car? I thought they were going to roll out the 4C.
That's true.
Be pretty sweet.
I think the business case for that is thin. But that's because I haven't seen the business case for it. So that's me shooting from the hip.
Pew, pew. By the way, just to jump back to the Lincoln thing, I'll leave it alone after that. But there's a dark side to like the whole us as automotive journalists talking about cars that we love that we want to see happen but won't they won't sell in major numbers. There are a lot of like Lincoln apologists, and that comes from a lot of the industry or a lot of media as well as the industry being in Detroit. And I feel like one of the things is maybe this brand got drawn out longer than it did because there are enough people in the automotive press that are apologists for the Lincoln brand that they were left to think that, hey, we can keep this thing going.
We'll pick back up on that.
I don't even know if it's that. I think there is some genuine excitement about Lincoln from the consumer side of things, because when you see the posts go up about Lincoln, everybody's super excited to see what they're going to do. And when it turns out to be just another fusion, there's palpable disappointment. I don't think they're wrong in trying to keep that brand going. It's just weird to see it be so directionless when you have such a storied history to pull upon. And that's great that you're marketing the crap out of cars that you made 50 years ago, but time to do something else beyond just advertise. That's not working for you. Sorry.
We'll pick up on Lincoln, but do you
makes me angry, Dan.
I know it does, and I will give you ample opportunity to be angry, because I enjoy it myself. But back to the brand question. What about a Chinese brand?
I thought about that.
God, I hope not.
Why
not?
They're the ones that are already like the ripoffs of like intellectual property.
No, you know that the Chinese brands that come over here is going to be the best of the best. They're going to be the most successful, the ones with the most money, the most support from their backers. So it's not going to be that GM 4000 thing. It's not going to be the Wuling.
Yeah, designs they reverse engineered from importing cars to China.
Well, to a certain degree.
You know what that sounds like? That sounds like Hyundai from 15 years ago.
Right, and to a certain degree, every automaker takes every other automaker's stuff apart. They all try to do it. So that's...
Yeah, fair enough. Like, have some fun and look through the galleries of just blatant ripoffs that are Chinese, the Chinese automaker cars. The poorly done F-150 to the poorly done Jeep Grand Cherokee to the poorly done, Ford Explorer ripoff. I mean, it scares the crap out of me.
Well, I don't know that really bothers me that much. I mean, our auto industry has emulated itself for a long time. It's been quite an echo chamber. I mean, look at the Chrysler 300 when it came out. Everybody said it looked like a Bentley. That stuff happens.
There's a difference between evoking a previous design and being just a blatant rip of a previous design.
Well, sure, and I don't think any company that would come here, and I'm not saying it would happen in the next 2 years, I'm saying 5 to 10, I don't think any company that would come here wouldn't be at a certain stage of maturity to be beyond that. I think they would have to come with their own fresh designs and offer something either value or, follow the South Korean model where they just shove a crap ton of content at a car for a reasonable price.
I think
you guys are just being nice in case our future Chinese overlords are listening.
No, I think
they own my mortgage. How can not?
It wouldn't be necessarily a bad thing. If it's a bad thing, it's going to end badly, and they'll be here, and they will then not be here.
Oh my god!
I think of any nation that could bring a car company to the U.S., it's definitely China. They've got the economic momentum to raise a brand from their copycatting roots to an actual manufacturing powerhouse and start exporting cars.
No, they definitely have the largest auto industry that doesn't play ball in the American market whatsoever.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you've got American companies really trying to get into the Chinese market. I don't see why they, should not be allowed into the American market. And they'll come up with a product that we will buy. It's just going to be the way it goes. So I'm actually really excited to see which Chinese brand comes over with what product. And I just hope it's not a reborn Saab.
Really? An electric Saab, no
well,
less.
Well, Tata's Indian.
That was a joke.
Okay.
Yeah, if any sort of resurrected Saab shows up, I'm just going to start firing into dealerships. I'm so done with the sob story. I've written so many sob posts. I know, it's really bad.
Yeah.
I've written so many sob posts. Saab is dead. Oh, no, wait. Saab has new investors. No, those Saab investors left because for some reason they left. Oh, but no, there's more. Don't worry. Saab will live. Just whatever you're going to do, do it quietly, Saab. That's all I'm asking. Just do it quietly. Leave me alone, yeah. Please.
Saab needs to just take like a handful of pills and never wake up. That'd be enough. So just go quietly. So anyway, back to the Lincoln while you're angry. With the MKZ now hitting dealer lots, straight up, would you rather have the 2013 MKZ or the 2013 Lexus ES? They are direct competition for each other and not amazing by any measure, but are volume leaders. So asks Ryan A. from Nevada.
I haven't driven either, so I'm going to abstain. I mean, I lean on that. I'd probably go with the Lexus. I'd go with the Lexus.
Really?
Ditto.
I think I would.
Wow. As much as I hate that Lincoln face, I'd probably want the Lincoln because it has that little bit of verve that the Fusion has.
Whereas, yeah, I want to own a car that whose dealers will still be around in 5 years.
Right. Snap. So if you own a Lincoln, what's to stop you from taking it to a Ford dealer like any Saturn owner knows?
Oh, point, counterpoint. All right.
Come on, let's go. Step it up, George.
I don't know. It's just not. I'm not feeling the MKZ. All right.
I would not want to encourage Lincoln with that purchase. That's what I would not want to do. I don't want them to think. No. I don't want to reward them for just being like, look, it's a fancy Fusion. What do you think about that? Give me your money. Screw you. Step off. No. It's an ugly car. I don't want it.
Well, the ES is by no means an attractive car. It's a sort of an innocuous car.
Well, it's got that new Predator grill thing going on. I don't know. I'm not saying that it's a great looker. I'm just saying I would not want to give Ford my money for just pillaging that brand the way they continue to pillage that brand.
So basically, you'd like to doom Lincoln to a certain death by not sort of taking one for the team, because you know the interior of the MKZ is going to be really nice. You know it's going to drive well. It, if you don't count the face, it looks good.
Because the entire time I drive it, I'll be thinking, you know what? I could have had that really good looking Fusion instead, but I bought this.
And Dan, when you just
and
said
I paid
that,
more money for it,
but you get the V6. You can get the V6.
Yeah, when you just said that the person buying the Lincoln would be "quote unquote" taking one for the team, I'm pretty sure they just made up their buying decision.
Listen, buying an Lexus ES is no less taking one for the team.
No, but you know what the difference is, that the ES knows that it's as innocuous as it is. There's no crazy pomp and circumstance and, you know, advertising blitz celebrating, you know.
Celebrating nothing. Celebrating zero things. Making
celebrating
up
the guy from Mad Men.
Right.
Because that's the link we want to make. The 60s. Yeah.
We're the guy that has multiple heart attacks on Mad Men. That's great.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like they're buyers.
Yeah, seriously. Maybe they did hit spot on.
Yeah. I don't know. My answer
is... Dude, honestly, pony up your hard-earned cash for the MKZ.
I was thinking, though, like, I don't think I could bring myself to buy an ES. I just don't. It's a fine car. There's nothing wrong with it. It's luxurious. It's well done. I just don't think I'd enjoy driving it every day, where the MKZ I probably would enjoy more.
Ugh,
well, there's a difference in my mind, between driving a car and existing in a car. A car like an ES, you commute in. You're not driving it from like a, you know, a driving enthusiast standpoint. And maybe that probably wasn't even what you meant by it, but the ES just does what it does so well, and that is just make a comfortable place for you to exist in between the house and the office.
But wait, if you're a driving enthusiast, you are driving. No matter what you're driving, you are driving.
Yeah, but if you're asking the difference between, you know, a choice between an ES and an MKZ, I don't know if you, you know, that makes much of a driving enthusiast out of, you know, I don't know.
No, but I'm saying, like, me as an enthusiast... I mean, honestly, my answer would be Lexus GS 350. Bang.
Yes.
Done.
Yes. Absolutely.
But if I had to choose between Lexus and Lincoln, and Lincoln's got nothing. So that drives that decision. And the GS is actually a fantastic car.
Agreed.
But the ES is not. Where I think the MKZ is probably going to handle sharper. It's going to ride better. It's going to do all those fusion-y things. And it'll have a V6, which you can't get.
For more money.
For more money.
Yeah. By the way,
just for bigger incentives and less resale.
Refresh my memory. How much does the MKZ start for?
I don't know.
Hold on.
Nice.
Honestly. Nice.
Well, I don't have it in me to go look it up online right now.
We're answering questions. We're keep shooting.
$37,155.
That's the MKZ or the ES?
MKZ.
Okay.
I mean, probably getting into like low 40s once you get it with, you know, things that you want to get it with.
No, you're probably into high 40s the way Ford has been pricing their stuff lately.
Okay, exactly. So, really, are you
going to pay ES, let's see. The hybrid starts at 38,850, and the standard starts at 36,100.
36. I still couldn't bring myself to do the ES. Couldn't.
Really, Dan? Are you just saying that?
No, because I do not like the way that the MKZ looks, but I think all of the other stuff about it recommends it. If I had to pick between those two, I'd probably pick the one that's more enjoyable to drive. That's going to be the MKZ.
I haven't driven either yet, so I don't know.
Nor do I.
Yeah. All right, so we have killed it. We are brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. So you know where to find us, podcast@autoblog.com. You can throw us a note in iTunes as well. Comment on the post. I did check on the iOS updating of podcasts on Apple devices. It's still busted, but the Autoblog podcast app works. So that's one way to get them. It's an Apple issue. So blame them. Get them to fix it. We don't know what's wrong. So there's that. But until next week, I'm Dan, and that's Zach and George. We'll see you later.
See you guys.
Later, guys.